Hello and welcome back to Read This Next with Nicole and Laura. This week we are doing a topic semi-requested by the public, which is the Forest of Reading Evergreen Awards. Laura, tell us about it.
Okay. So the Forest of Reading is this program that is run in Ontario, and they have different levels of awards by age group. The schools often participate, so if you have children in the schools, you may well have heard of Forest of Reading before. And there is There is a tier of adult nominations. And we got an email from someone saying, hey, do you guys run the adult program, Forest of Reading? And we don't, but maybe something we could consider in the future. And when I got the request, I went and looked at the list of books that were the current nominations. And wouldn't you know, unsurprisingly, there are some pretty great titles.
Yeah.
So we thought, let's highlight some of these great Canadian, like quite recent new books.
With some great covers too.
Yes.
Love
a
it.
A nice variety of titles. So something for everyone maybe, hopefully.
Yeah. Do you want me to start?
Sure.
Okay. This first one is Adrift by Lisa Bridoux. So it says, for fans of The Last Thing He Told Me, the truth won't always set you free. S wakes up alone on a sailboat in the remote Pacific Northwest with no memory of who she is or how she got there. She finds a note, but it's more of a warning than comfort. Start over. Don't make yourself known. Don't look back. That's scary.
I'm so into this.
Yeah. S must have answers. She sails over a turbulent ocean to a town hundreds of miles away that she hopes might offer some insight. The chilling clues she uncovers point to a desperate attempt at erasing her former life. But why? And someone is watching her. Someone who knows she must never learn her truth. In S's world, the Earth is precariously balanced at a climate tipping point, and she is perched at the edge of a choice. Which life does she want? The one taken from her and the dangerous secret that was buried, or the new one that she can make for herself. That sounds cool.
Yeah, I know. It falls under the, what I think to be unpleasantly named genre of cli-fi, climate fiction, unfortunate choice, whoever made that call to call it that, but that sort of thing. And then also like, sort of wilderness survival, like I'm always into that,
and
then
thriller.
Also dystopia and thriller, like for fans of The Last Thing He Told Me, like that was a very real world thriller.
Yay.
So if you enjoyed that one, this I guess has the same sort of thrilling tone, but takes it in a different, like, sort of science fiction-y
that's really cool
world. Yeah. Okay. Next one is called The Berry Pickers by Amanda Peters. Oh, this one's sounds sad.
Yeah.
Okay. July 1962. A Mi'kmaq family from Nova Scotia arrives in Maine to pick blueberries for the summer. Weeks later, 4-year-old Ruthie, the family's youngest girl, vanishes. Youngest child, sorry, not just girl. Child in general. She is last seen by her 6-year-old brother, Joe, sitting on a favorite rock at the edge of a berry field. Joe will remain distraught by his sister's disappearance for years to come. In Maine, a young girl named Norma grows up as the only child of an affluent family. Her father is emotionally distant, her mother frustratingly overprotective. Norma is often troubled by recurring dreams and visions that seem more like memories than imagination. As she grows older, Norma slowly comes to realize there is something her parents aren't telling her. Unwilling to abandon her intuition, she will spend decades trying to uncover this family secret. So this is another one that says, for readers of The Vanishing Half and Woman of Light. Oh, and this one's a debut.
Oh.
A novel about the search for truth, the shadow of trauma, and the persistence of love across time.
Ah, so sweet, yeah. And kind of sad.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. Nova Scotia, family. Though.
Yeah.
They go to Maine. That's interesting. I wonder if it talks about the... Because I have no idea what the immigration process was like.
I think it's just a visit.
Oh, okay. I thought that they weren't moving. Oh, no, they're just picking blueberries. Dang.
Yeah, Oh, it's just a little trip.
There you go.
That they lose a child who never comes home from. So that's, you know, just a true parental horror story.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Our next one is The Burden of Exile, a banned journalist's flight from dictatorship, by Aaron Berhane. Don't know about him. Guess we'll find out. Okay. An idealistic journalist with a young family starts the first independent newspaper in the notorious police state Eritrea. Is this a real place?
Yes. This one, I was going to say, this is a mix of fiction and nonfiction titles. I want to say it's Eritrea, but okay. I could be wrong.
We'll try Eritrea then. One of the most brutal dictatorships in the world. When the paper is shut down, he flees arrest and begins a dangerous journey of freedom, first across the desert at night into Sudan, pursued by Eritrean secret police, and then into a secret safe house in Kenya. With the help of the United Nations, he finds sanctuary in Canada, a place he knows nothing about. Meanwhile, his wife and young children are stuck back at home in constant danger of reprisal. Verhaen's story is one of bravery amid complicated international geopolitics, of spies, guns, and betrayal, and ultimately of triumph and the piecing together of a family in a cold new world, specifically Mabou, a tight-knit seaside community where the lobster is as abundant as beaches, fiddles, and Gaelic folk songs. With the singular goal of paying off her student loans. Who's Katie? Where'd she come from? They're saying, with the singular goal of paying off her student loans, Katie heads out west.
Let me see.
Who is she?
Who is this person?
I'll keep reading it while you try and figure out.
Sure.
Okay. So Katie heads out west to take advantage of Alberta's oil rush, part of the long tradition of East Coasters who seek gainful employment elsewhere when they can't find it in the homeland they love so much. Katie encounters the harsh reality of life in the oil sands where trauma is an everyday occurrence yet is never discussed.
Genuinely, that is how the description is. So I'm going to... From the place I pulled it from. So I'm going to see if there is more. Maybe Katie is his wife?
No, because his family's stuck back in Eritrea.
But don't they get...
I said... Well, it says ultimately they are brought back together, but...
You know what? That little bit is not in the, like, Goodreads description. So I think... It may actually have been incorrectly displayed on the Forrester Reading website, and the description ends after the piecing together a family in a cold new country.
Oh, I just Googled that little piece. That's a description of Oil Sands by Kate Beaton.
I wonder if that was a potential... I was going to say, there was a recent book about...
Yeah.
Working in the oil sands.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so it ends after... I don't know if you want to reread that last paragraph.
Yeah, I'll reread it so that we don't have the confusion in there. So it says, Berhane's story is one of bravery amid complicated international geopolitics of spies, guns, and betrayal, and ultimately of triumph and the piecing together of a family in a cold new country specific... Period. Oh no,
we just got like cut up again.
Yeah, I can see lagging. Okay. I think we got it though. But I almost started reading the next line cuz I think the break starts where it says specifically Mabou.
I just took it out.
Oh, I'm reading directly from the website.
Oh yeah, no, I copied and pasted it into a document for us.
You're so smart.
I'm
just reading directly from the website.
That worked too.
So interesting. Yeah. If you're reading on the Forrester Reading website, please note the last paragraph for this novel is a little bit wonky.
Yeah, includes a description that actually belongs to a different book.
Yeah, but that's still Canadian too, right? Ducks was about Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. I'm going to jump on to the next novel, actually.
Cool.
This one is called Far Cry lovely cover by Alyssa York. It looks very cold.
It does. That
cover. All right. It's 1922 at Far Cry Cannery, a quarter mile of boardwalk and wooden buildings strung along the rocks of Rivers Inlet on the northwest coast of British Columbia. The time has come for Anders Viken, storekeeper and honorary uncle to the recently orphaned Kit, to give an account of his secret self, from his first home in Norway, another land of islands and fjords, to his escape from his family's loving grip, to his wide-open years of rough living and impossible love. As the sockeye flood up the inlet, Anders sets his secrets down for 18-year-old Kit, the only member of his chosen family he has left. After her mother, Bobby, scandalized Far Cry by running off with the camp's handsome Chinese cook, and her father, Frank, was found drowned alongside his own boat. While Anders does his reckoning, Kit fends off the attentions of the cannery manager and tries to earn her keep. Oars in hand, she glides her skiff out over the great returning school and casts her net. This, at least, makes sense to her, as opposed to the convoluted workings of love.
Wow. It sounds interesting. Okay, welcome back to day two of us filming, because our audio and internet was not working yesterday when we were filming, so we're going to continue today in our new outfits. Okay, our next one is Fireweather, The Making of a Beast by John Valiant. In May 2016, Fort McMurray, the hub of Canada's petroleum industry and America's biggest foreign supplier, was overrun by wildfire. The multi-million dollar disaster melted vehicles, turned entire neighborhoods into firebombs, and drove 88,000 people from their homes in a single afternoon. Through the lens of this apocalyptic conflagration, the wildfire equivalent of Hurricane Katrina, John Valiant warns that this was not a unique event, but a shocking preview of what we must prepare for in a hotter, more flammable world. So this sounds kind of like very climate related as well then.
Yes, but nonfiction.
Nonfiction. Right? So not, yeah. not the fi in cli-fi. For hundreds of millennia, fire has been a partner in our evolution, shaping culture, civilization, and very likely our brains. Fire has enabled us to cook our food, defend and heat our homes, and power the machines that drive our titanic economy. Yet this volatile energy source has always threatened to elude our control, and in our new age of intensifying climate change, we are seeing its destructive power unleashed in previously unimaginable ways. With masterly prose and a cinematic eye, Valiant takes us on a riveting journey through the intertwined stories of North America's oil industry and the birth of climate science, to the unprecedented devastation wrought by modern forest fires, and into our lives forever changed by these disasters. Yeah, that sounds really cool. Devastating.
It does. I remember hearing, obviously, like you couldn't avoid hearing about it in the news, but then it just kind of seemed to drop out after 2016. You didn't really hear about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting comparison to say, what did he say? Like the wildfire equivalent of Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah. Well, it was that devastating. So
yeah. To like give you an idea of scale. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Forest fires seem to, I think because they're so reoccurring with their devastation, tend to, like, in the culture's eye, they're just like passing, but they're getting worse and worse. Anyways.
Yes. Something else to worry about.
Yay.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Next one. This one, I think, is like a near future science fiction. Very, very near future. Probably. Okay. It's called Girlfriend on Mars, written by Deborah Willis. This one's another debut. Amber Kivinen is moving to Mars, or at least she will be if she wins a chance to join Mars Now. She and 23 reality TV contestants from around the world, including a handsome Israeli, an endearing fellow Canadian, an assortment of science nerds and wannabe influencers, are competing for two seats on the first human-led mission to Mars, sponsored by billionaire Jeff Task. Who could that possibly
I don't know.
Meanwhile, Kevin, Amber's boyfriend of 14 years, was content going nowhere until Amber left him and their hydroponic weed business behind. As he tends to the plants growing in their absurdly overpriced Vancouver basement apartment, Kevin tunes in to find out why the love of his life is so determined to leave the planet with somebody else.
Fair.
A satirical indictment of our pursuit of fame and wealth amidst environmental crisis and an exploration of humanity's deepest longing, greatest quest, and most endearing cliche, love.
Oh, that sounds... wasn't there a different book? It reminds me of the book that we talked about where I feel like the girl was being haunted by her boyfriend and he couldn't figure out why she like left on a plane to go somewhere. Do you remember which one I'm talking about?
It was a superhero and he was turned invisible or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very yeah. similar concept, I guess, but totally different premise.
Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, it's probably solely because of the title, but it reminds me of Girlfriend in a Coma, which is by Douglas Copeland.
There you go. Probably a riff on it.
Which is another one where, no, probably not. That's an old book nowadays. It's probably showing my age. That's not one of his big ones that's been really, canonized. But anyway, it sounds interesting.
It does.
Oh boy, I just went clouded again.
It'll
come back. Yeah, and I wonder how like starkly satirical it is of the tech billionaire. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on when she started writing this, I feel like people's opinions on Elon Musk have really changed. Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? I was thinking Jeff Bezos.
Oh yeah, no, it's Musk is the one who wants to go to Mars, right?
It's like she combined Jeff and Musk into Jeff Task.
Yeah. Yes.
That's cute.
Literally. Yeah, no, I was thinking because he's the Mars guy, right?
But, yeah, no, you're totally right. Yeah. He's the rocket man. I love the cover, too. It's, like, very simple, but it kind of, yeah, I like it. Kind of reminds you of the 60s styles font that you would have seen on, like, Valley of the Dolls or something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next one, which other one are we going to skip? Because I'm still on the website.
We were going to skip Super Fan, I think, and do Silver Nitrate and the Story of Us.
Okay, perfect. Then I will move on to Silver Nitrate, which is by Silvia Moreno Garcia. Is this Mexican Gothic?
It is. We recommend like every single one of her books.
She's good.
Every time there's anyone out, it ends up on the list.
Montserrat has all. Montserrat?
I think so.
Okay.
Sure.
They've always been overlooked. She's a talented sound editor, but she's left out of the boys' club running the film industry in 90s Mexico City. And she's all but invisible to her best friend, Tristan, a charming if faded soap opera star, though she's been in love with him since childhood. When Tristan discovers his new neighbor is the cult horror director, I'm struggling with the two U's there, and the legendary auteur claims he can change their lives, even if his tale of a Nazi occultist, imbuing magic into a highly volatile silver nitrate stock sounds like sheer fantasy. That is quite the sentence.
Yeah, you made it through.
Yeah. The magic film was never finished, and which is why Uretra swears his career vanished overnight. He is cursed. Now the director wants Montserrat and Tristan to help him shoot the missing scene and lift the curse. But Montserrat soon notices a dark presence following her, and Tristan begins to see the ghost of his ex-girlfriend. As they work together to unravel the mystery of the film and the obscure occultist who once roamed their city, Montserrat and Tristan may find that sorcerers and magic are not only the stuff of movies.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Kind of urban fantasy.
Yeah. Again, you know, into the sound sort of gothic-y as well. The cover is so good.
I love it. So yeah. Attention-grabbing.
Yeah. yeah, interesting mixture of stuff, you know, like ordinarily when you're like old Hollywood lost film stuff, it's going to be something in LA or whatever. Mm-hmm. This one, you know, nice to get a different perspective. Mexico City.
Yeah. Ugh, yeah. So good. Is she Canadian? She must be then.
Yes.
Oh, wow. You love to see
I
it.
I know. Lucky us. Seriously. Yeah. Okay. The next one is, I was helping someone find another book by this author because I guess she was, her book Scarborough was a Canada Reads finalist.
Okay.
So if this name sounds familiar, that's why. It's Catherine Hernandez, and this book is called The Story of Us. Okay. Like many overseas Filipino workers, Mary Grace Concepcion has lived a life of sacrifices. First, she left her husband, Al, to be a caregiver in Hong Kong. Now she has traveled even farther to Canada in hopes of one day sponsoring Al and having children of their own. But when she arrives in Toronto, she must navigate a series of bewildering and careless employers and unruly children. Mary Grace seeks new employment as a personal support worker and begins caring for Liz, an elderly patient suffering from Alzheimer's disease, whose health is as fragile as her rundown bungalow beside the Rouge River in Scarborough.
Okay.
While Mary Grace's time with her charge challenges her conservative beliefs, she soon becomes Liz's greatest ally, and the friendship that grows between them will turn out to be just as legendary as Liz's past. Beautifully narrated by the all-seeing eye of Mary Grace's newborn baby, The Story of Us is a novel about sisterhood, about blood and chosen family, and about how belonging can be found where we least expect it.
Interesting. The baby tells the story?
Yeah.
I don't know. And the cover is a nesting doll. I like that.
And, like, friendship between unlikely people, you know? That's always kind of a see how they fit together. It's a great trope. Like a found family of two, sort of, it sounds like, right? Yeah. Like this lonely, declining older person and this someone from a totally different perspective comes into their lives and they're both changed. Good.
We love it. It's so good. This last one is Superfan, How Pop Culture Broke My Heart by Jen Suk Fong Lee, which looks like it's presumably nonfiction as well. Okay. Yes. For most of Jen Suk Fong Lee's life, pop culture was an escape from family tragedy and a means of fitting in with the larger culture around her. Anne of Green Gables promised her that, despite losing her. You're like, yeah! Despite losing her father at the age of 12, one day she might still have the loving family of her dreams. Princess Diana was proof that maybe there was more to being a good girl after all. And yet, as Jen grew up, she began to recognize the ways in which pop culture was not made for someone like her. The child of Chinese immigrant parents who looked for safety in the invisibility afforded by embracing model minority myths. Interesting. Ranging from the unattainable perfection of Gwyneth Paltrow and the father figure familiarity of Bob Ross to the long shadow cast by the Joy Luck Club and the life lessons she has learned from Rihanna, Jen weaves together key moments in pop culture with stories of her own failings, longings, and struggles as she navigates the minefields that come with carving her own path as an Asian woman, single mother, and writer. And with great wit, bracing honesty, and a deep appreciation for the ways culture shapes us, she draws direct lines between the spectacle of the popular, the intimacy of our personal bonds, and the social foundations of our collective obsessions. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like there's tons. There's quite a few interesting nonfiction books about women engaging with popular culture of their youth.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, just from like her perspective, like not being someone who's a member of minority, mm-hmm. which I feel like a lot of those other books are not, brings a different kind of perspective again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I don't feel like none of those have ever talked about the father figure familiarity of Bob Ross.
Yeah.
Like as in the painter.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't come up that much. So yeah.
He's an icon for a different reason now. People just love him for being Bob Ross. It's interesting. Yeah. I love that this list has so many different perspectives because, Canada's Canada's full of different perspectives, and I like to see that reflected in our award winners and nominations and stuff like that, because it's important.
Yeah. What a list.
So I'll wrap us up then. Sound good?
Sure.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you again for listening or watching our podcast. You can watch us on YouTube. We're at TBAPL. You can follow us on all the social medias, like, comment, subscribe, do all that fun stuff. We're at TBAPL across the board. And if you are wanting to, I lost my train of thought there. We'll see you all soon with a new episode. Bye.
Bye.